Welcome to Making Sense, the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. And of course, supported by our lovely friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook, an independent financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, the property journey can be a frustrating one. And frankly, it's also a bit intimidating. We're talking big numbers, lots of jargon, and people in suits who are in charge of telling you yes or no to your dream. Lovely. So what about a digital helper? An app that helps you figure out what's possible and what's not. And of course, it's 2025, so it's using AI. Now, this might sound like a welcome handy helper, or it might freak you right out because you're wondering whether you should trust AI with some of your most sensitive financial information. So let's dive in. What's possible? What's not? And should you trust it? Before we get into it, Making Sense is stoked to be supported by KiwiBank. We've teamed up to bring you insight directly from their people, the experts who live and breathe this stuff every day. It's not the outdated stuff that worked 5 years ago. It's what's happening right now in the industry to help you make the most of your money. This is making Kiwi better off. This is Kiwi. All right, I'm joined now by Roy Chowdhury, founder of Homely, and you've created Homely. You call it a digital mortgage assistant. What is a one of those?
Yes, thank you, Frances, first of all, for having me here. Homely is a digital mortgage assistant that empowers home buyers to take control of their mortgage journey, simplistically put. So if you think of buying a home is one of the biggest financial decisions of our life, yet more than 60% of the home buyers leave it in the hands of the others. Because it's too complex, too time-consuming, and that disengages them. We want to change that. So Homely basically is a personal mortgage assistant that works with the home buyers to navigate the intricacies and the complexities of the mortgage application process and helps them to connect with the lenders through one simple application.
It is quite intimidating, I think, for people when they're trying to, especially if you think first home buyers, going through this mortgage process. It freaks people out because there's quite an imbalance of power, I think. This is a really important issue for people getting into their home. You're talking to a bank or a lender or whoever, and it is, there's a lot on the line and there's a lot of money involved and there's a lot of jargon involved. So all of that, I think, makes it quite intimidating for people. What do you think is the most intimidating part of the process that you would like to fix?
Definitely. It is definitely very intimidating for a lot of people, particularly the first home buyers who haven't had an experience before. And it is intimidating because it's complex, it's time consuming and non-repeatable. So you may go and have a conversation with the bank and fill up an application, but if that doesn't work out, the process to go to another bank and have that conversation is very, very, you know, it's not repeatable. And that's where AI comes in. AI effectively completely streamlines the process from creating a mortgage application, finding the right lenders, all the way through making the lender's process a lot easier and faster as well, so that they can give a decision 5 times faster. This is the first platform of its kind which addresses all of those process silos comprehensively, which ultimately improves the simplifies the customer experience significantly. And hopefully, that through that experience, it'll make it less daunting and less intimidating.
Yeah. And AI, right? That is being talked about so much. So I think one of the things that happens there can be a lot of hype when we're talking about these new technologies. And I feel like I talk to people about AI and they get really, really excited about what might and might not happen. There's not always a lot of reality in there. So in reality, with what you're using here and how AI is involved, what's possible and what can we do right now that is actually helping people?
Great question. I mean, AI has come a long way, particularly in the last 12 to 18 months. Now, a lot of people are interacting pretty much on a daily basis. The AI model that drives Homely is proprietary to us. It's not a ChatGPT or a GenAI kind of plugin. We have developed this completely ground up and have trained the models for over 2 years. So a lot of work has gone into building those AI models. It is effectively as a cognitive ability, same as our human brain. So what it does, it understands the context of the information and then assigns a next best human action, pretty much how our brain functions. So it coordinates all of those activities, everything through that AI model that we have developed. And because it is AI, it doesn't sleep, it doesn't go on holiday, it work on the weekends. So effectively, it is literally the home buyer's personal digital assistant who's working for them 24/7, 365 days a year. And that's quite powerful, you know, giving something very personal and that they can operate from the comfort of their sofa in the lounge and interact with it. I think that's the power. But yeah, I think AI is obviously a lot more accepted now than what it was even 12 months back.
I'd love to pick up on something you mentioned there about this is your AI. You haven't plugged into something like ChatGPT, because you see that happening with certain businesses saying, oh, we'd like to get into AI, but it can be a lot. Like you said, it's taken you a couple of years to build this up and make something that's usable. And so you do see some businesses just try to plug in to the existing, like you say, ChatGPT or other models that are around. Do you think that's dangerous for a business to do, to sort of outsource the AI functionings? What can be the pros and cons there?
Yes and no. I mean, those are pretty standard large language models, and you know, they're very, very, very powerful. But for a company like ours, or even for a mid-sized company, it would be almost impossible to develop some technologies like that. It'll cost you millions and billions of dollars. Those large language models work on the basis that you have to feed them millions of data, millions of information, and then it makes sense of that. Our model actually works completely opposite. We actually train them with a small set of data, and the focus is more on the accuracy and not so much on the volume. So we decided to develop the model because that was our requirement. But there's a lot of AI models that you can just plug in and get a response back, and does, I think, reasonably well. But the problem is that you can't actually modify it, because the whole thing is a black box. Whatever you know, APIs they give you, you can integrate that to your system and do within the boundaries of what has been defined. But if you want something very specific to your need, then those large language models don't offer that. There's obviously some concerns about the data protection, privacy, where the data being stored. So we have seen that a lot of banks and government, they're quite resistant of using publicly available AI models. They're looking for a more governed AI models. And there are some players who are developing them as well and hosting them within the firewalls of the bank and within their environment, rather than, you know, connecting to a third-party AI model.
Yeah, that was actually the next question on my mind. I'm so glad that you lent into that already, because obviously with financial data, that's super sensitive. And we have a lot of rules around what you can and can't do with financial data. And so was it tricky for you developing a digital assistant using AI and knowing that people are going to have questions around, okay, where does all of this go? How protected is it? You know, what sort of guardrails do you have to put in place there?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, ethical use of AI, personal data protection, and using AI within the boundaries of legislation and compliance is very important consideration for us. In fact, a lot of the work that we're doing and going to be doing is actually around the security and how we protect the data. I mean, think about this. This is your whole life's financial information. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is zero tolerance for any kind of breach. But we are working with some of the biggest tech providers who also understand the importance of data protection and putting those guardrails. And there are solutions available that they don't come cheap, but there are solutions available where you can actually protect the data and use it safely. But yeah, I mean, it is a huge consideration for us. And we are constantly thinking about how we can use AI in a way that people find safe and non-intrusive. I mean, AI can be very intrusive if not used correctly, but this is such a high trust area, finance and, you know, personal finance and mortgage and all of that. You have to build that trust. And that means that you cannot just use AI whatever way you like to use it. There has to be some guardrails and the boundaries set up.
Yeah, and I do think people, I mean, with good reason, I also get nervous about, you know, the digital transformation. And sometimes, you know, it's that old quote, isn't it, about so concerned with whether you can that you don't stop to think about whether you should. And so I think it's always important that we're having these conversations as we go, because the digital transformation can be so fast that we've got to make sure we do slow down and think, oh, are we sure we want to do this? What sort of other considerations do you have to take into account? You know, when people are worried about unethical use of AI. Are there any other issues that come up for you?
Yes, AI models can actually be biased as well. So we need to make sure that it is not throwing any kind of bias or hallucination and things like that. So constantly we have to check the accuracy of the models.
What sort of bias can it throw up in home lending?
Obviously, there's quite a new area for New Zealand, but in the US, apparently the banks have declined loan based on their race, color of the skin, you know, that kind of thing. So it does happen. Although we are not obviously making the decisions, we are making the process, you know, streamlining the process, and then banks are making the decisions. So we're a little bit guarded from that. But AI can go wrong and horribly wrong as well. And also the data as well, because you cannot create a good AI with bad data. So you have to make sure the data is of acceptable quality. And obviously what the data that we're getting from the customers is to be protected, but it also needs to be given some meaning so the AI models can actually understand what it's looking at, how to read the data, how to make sense of it. So it's actually quite an elaborate process. The other thing around AI is probably just building the trust over time. And as I said, I mean, we have seen that people are a lot more confident or open to using AI in the last 12 months, 18 months than they were before, way before. We actually had a survey done recently, and we were absolutely blown away by the results. 77% of the respondents say they will definitely use an AI assistant over a human advisor.
Over a human advisor? So they would prefer it?
Over a human. Right. Yes, 77%.
Wow.
So we did this survey about 18 months back, around end of 23, beginning of 24. And that particular, the only demography that kind of said that they'll be okay with the digital assistant was the younger group, the 25 to 35 age group. This proportion has come completely from outside of that group, so over 35. And 82% of the respondents were actually over 35, and 77% said that they will definitely use an AI assistant over a human advisor. That kind of shows that how far AI has come over this period of time and the trust it has created. I mean, people are interacting with AI pretty much on a daily basis, whether it's ChatGPT or anything. So I think it has come a long way. And I think New Zealand is well and truly ready for an AI disruption.
That's fascinating that people are saying that they would actually prefer it. I wonder what's behind that. If there's something like, you know, if the process feels intimidating, it's a little easier to sort of muddle your way through with a computer and not feel embarrassed or something like that. Were there any insights on why they would prefer it?
Definitely. Yeah, it's exactly that, Francis. So people are, again, we interviewed a few people as well, not just the survey. And a lot of the people said, not just the younger people, they said they're actually quite intimidated and I guess uncomfortable sitting in front of a human advisor and having those, you know, very personal financial conversations. They have a fear of rejection. And as a result, a lot of the first-time buyers, they actually don't start having those conversations or thinking about the financial till much later, although they could have actually started the journey a lot earlier. So it is, I guess, AI is kind of lowering that barrier a little bit. You can now start digitally. As I said, from the comfort of your lounge, from your sofa, at any time of the day, you don't have to pick up a phone to talk to anyone or sit in front of anyone. And you can kind of start the process in a non-threatening way to get better understanding of where you're at financially. I think that's probably a big reason why people would say that they would give it a try. The other thing is just a change in perception, change in user experience, I suppose. If you think of like 5 years out, that financial human-driven financial advice is probably a little bit outdated for the Gen Zs and Gen X and for the reasons I mentioned, because sitting in front of the humans actually creates a little bit of anxiety for them. So they would probably want to start the journey digitally. And then as they go along, they might want to sit in front of a banker to have a more involved conversation. And that's absolutely fine. But starting the journey, I think the preference is towards a digital option rather than a human option.
Sort of starting a little slower and a little easier and working up to a person.
Yeah. And see, like most people are actually reasonably savvy. They can kind of make sense. And if you make the instructions clear and kind of do a little bit of handholding by creating a sort of assistant and things like that, most people can actually do it themselves. I mean, I call them DIY home buyers. I'm one of them, actually. I mean, I've used brokers, but I also wanted to do it myself just to see, you know, what's happening in the banking sector, you know, who's offering what interest and things like that. It's just that there was no tool that was geared to do that. It ultimately becomes very cumbersome because of the lack of tooling. And I think that's the problem we are solving. We are creating a tool that, okay, you can start, you can interact with the, you can create an application. Actually, AI creates the application and then validates with you. So it takes a lot of the effort away. And then you basically connect to the banks. Banks actually start putting offers. So, hey, Francis, look really good. If you come and talk to me, I'm going to give you this offer. And then another bank. So customers really empowered, doing their own, controlling their own financial narrative. And that's quite powerful.
I love it. I mean, there have been limits around things like this. I think often when we see the rules around technology and finance, particularly here in New Zealand, but it can go quite slowly in this area. Again, I kind of understand why. It is important. You don't want to mess it up. It can be hard once the genie is out of the bottle. So I get it. But I think particularly New Zealand is very conservative in this area where, I mean, we've only just embraced open banking here in New Zealand. We're only just getting into that area properly. And then we look at things like robo-advising. I mean, this is off the top of my head, so I might have the date wrong, but I think robo-advising was only allowed in 2019. For people who are listening to that, double check that. But it was certainly very recent. So we see these sorts of things where we're often quite slow to embrace these changes, especially compared to other countries. So if you run into regulations while creating this, are you actually going to be able to take it out to the market? Has it changed what you can and can't do here?
Yeah, that's again a very important consideration. So we are engaged with FMA quite closely.
I'll bet.
Getting guidance from them at every step as to what is allowed versus what is questionable.
Mm.
We are not providing advice, and we are making that very clear in our platform. We are a digital tool that helps DIY home buyers to navigate the mortgage application process and connect with multiple lenders. That's it. If someone is looking for financial advice or needs a higher level of support during that process, then this is probably not the right platform for them, and we'll absolutely make sure that they are well supported. I think that's quite important that we don't use the technology for someone that it's not fit for purpose, and we'll constantly look into that. Yeah, I think when it comes to open banking, I feel that yes, it's still a little bit away, and this the CDR just got first reading in the parliament very recently, all of that. But I still think that it's not real now. I mean, there are platforms that actually exist where you can connect to and just see your data, and we're actually working with some of those platforms. So yeah, I think it's evolving. Yes, it has been slow. We're probably 10 years behind UK and a couple of years behind Australia. But I think there's a lot of momentum in the last few months. There has been a lot of momentum on open banking.
Life is full of ups and downs, so no matter what your everyday looks like, KiwiBank has the products and services to help you manage your money your way. To find out more, head to kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is KiwiBank.
Let's take it out a bit wider, because I think fair to say a lot of people are quite frustrated when they try to buy a home these days. This is not just a New Zealand problem, but it's certainly a pretty big problem in New Zealand for sure. And a lot of people feeling locked out of the property market. So what do you think in general? Is the property market hard to get into? Is this a fair concern for people?
Definitely. I feel that myself buyer as well. But I think there are a few issues relating to the property market and the housing affordability in general. We are not solving, obviously, all of that. We are solving a very specific problem, and that is relating to the access to funding. Our aim is to get as many Kiwis as possible in the home ownership, because that changes everything. You're much better off financially if you have a home, and the issue is how do you even make the start and get them there. So we are very focused and passionate about the first home buyers. It also happens to be a target audience because they're quite digitally savvy. It just helps. It's easier for us to reach them. They are more open to trying something digitally first, as I mentioned. But again, as I said, the whole nervousness about sitting in front of a human advisor and then making an appointment and going to see someone, that is very outdated. So hopefully, once you create an experience which is as seamless as booking a flight on Expedia or a hotel in booking.com, it will be a lot more acceptable. And hopefully that will start encourage them to start the journey a lot earlier, and they can have that conversation. Even getting a sense check that, okay, you're not ready, but do these things to get ready. That's a good piece of advice. And we're actually working with a few of the providers who actually exactly do that. They, I don't know if you've heard about Money Sweet Spot.
Yes.
So Sasha is one of the cohort members. So they basically get people out of debt. And then once they're out of debt, the next thing is how they can get into the home ownership. So we are having really meaningful conversation with Money Sweet Spot that, okay, the people who are not ready and the banks will not give them the loan now, how can we stay connected with them and help them to actually get there? So these are all of the conversations happening. And the other thing that I think is also important to mention is that there are different range of lenders. There's obviously the main banks, there are the smaller banks, there's tier two, and they all actually have a different offering. But often that don't get missed or represented in the light in the right time. Having a platform like this means all of those options are available. There. So if main banks are not your lender, maybe there's another lender who is suited to your need. And I don't think that those dots get crossed at the moment. And as a result, it's just a rejection and you know, they go away in the big world. So our commitment is to stay with those people who cannot get access to finance right now, but ultimately, you know, help them to kind of get into the property ownership ladder.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I want to be super clear that I think there are lots of issues with property here and elsewhere, that it is really hard for people. But there is also a certain subset of people who might be closer to getting a house than they realize, might be closer to that first home dream than they think. And it's they don't realize the tools they can use, the strategies that I've talked to so many mortgage advisors who've said they talked to someone who got sent there by their parents or something, and they just basically turned up and said, I'm here because I got told I had to. I know I can't afford a house. There's no point to this conversation. And when they went through the finances with them, they set up a plan where they said, in about a year, you know, you do these things over the course of a year, you're going to be ready to start properly house hunting. Now, okay, a year is a long time, but it's also not. It's also really not. And I think for a lot of people is getting that sort of roadmap of, yeah, you're not there now, but you're so much closer than you think. And here are the things you can do. That's incredibly valuable, right? So if someone can look at that on their phone and say, oh, there's my roadmap. That's amazing for accessibility. Like I say, not for everyone, but for actually quite a large slice of people, right?
Absolutely. And as I said, it's giving those advice or options at the right time and telling them exactly where they stand in their financial journey. Because if you don't know where you stand and where you want to get to, you can never start that journey, right? So I think it will, our expectation is, or our hope is, that it will make it a little bit easier to start the journey. And a lot of them may not be ready, but at least they know exactly where they stand and what they need to do to get there. That's the one thing. The other thing I want to mention is about, I actually know someone personally, exactly what you said. They thought that they're not ready. They were renting, and they were too afraid. There was obviously no homely that time, but I said, hang on, can we actually just do the finances and go through the process and see where you end up? Within 3 months, this person ended up buying a house. So there are examples in all our lives, where people just did a little bit of motivation, a little bit of, you know, push, I guess, and the right advice and the right tool, and it's a very different outcome.
That's amazing. And 3 months is no time at all.
Yep. I mean, 3 months was because we had to actually find a house. But the finance, once you actually, you know, got into the process, and the banks are actually very supportive. I mean, they will help you. They will give a pre-approval. Say, hey, this is what you can borrow. Now go and go shopping. I think there is already a good ecosystem. We just have to make it more accessible for everyone.
Yeah, and I think it's this real balance, right, isn't it, between we have to acknowledge the issues that people face and we have to be realistic about the fact that there are problems that we need to be addressing. But at the same time, this doomsdaying and this massive onslaught of negativity and no one can buy a house, that doesn't help either because it can make people stop before they even get started, which is not helpful.
I completely agree. I mean, you may not be able to buy your quarter-acre dream to start with, but surely you can buy a, you know, apartment or a, and there's actually a number of options now, Kangora being one, Simplicity being one. They're actually building affordable housing. There's a lot of options. But I guess that is also the problem, because there's so many options, where do you go looking?
Overwhelming.
So we are hoping that putting everything into one place and giving all of those options available to people who have got very different needs, it will actually change a lot of that. I mean, people will start thinking differently, knowing that actually I may not get this, but at least let me get into my own home as a starter for 10, and then I go to my dream home. And that's the journey that I think some of them have to go through.
Yeah. All right, changing gears entirely, because one of the ways that I came across this fantastic idea from you, you're part of FinTech Lab 2025. And I find the business process behind this idea just as interesting as the idea itself, to be honest. Been a really interesting crew this year coming through FinTech Lab. Lots of really interesting ideas. Has being part of that process changed your idea for Homely at all? You know, it's a really intensive process from my understanding of it. So have you leaned into any parts of it, leaned out of any others? What's that changing and metamorphosis been like?
It has been transformational, if that's the right word. It really changed our thinking in a big way. When we started the cohort, we were thinking very differently. And the full credit goes to the coaches and the mentors at the Credit HQ and the other fellow founders, and also companies like Henry and Shazies. We met them as part of the cohort, as a process, and they were very upfront about the journey that they've gone through. They're so authentic, and that really helped. That really helped our thinking that actually you have to start the journey. You can't just wait on the sideline, and there is everybody has gone through it. And some of those, think of Shazies and Henry's, they were so out there. All they got was a blank wall. I said, no, you can't do it. It's totally impossible. And they have actually overcome those challenges. And I kind of feel that Homely is in that bucket, because we are doing something so different. There is no template for it. There is no, standards for it. There's no, you know, so I we almost kind of say, okay, you know, it is possible. Let us show you how it can be done. And all of that happened as part of the accelerator. The mileage we have got over the last 8 to 9 weeks, it's phenomenal. I mean, I'm in front of you. That wouldn't have happened if I was kind of doing my own thing. And I think that's the beauty of being part of a accelerator program like this one. And the support from Creative HQ has been fantastic. And the founders, each of the founders are absolutely fantastic. You learn from them day in and day out. And you can quantify that with money. The money can't buy that. That cohort we have is just absolutely fantastic. So yeah, really, really grateful. And we are looking forward to the final pitch day, which is on the 30th of April. And there's going to be a big event in Wellington, 300 odd people. And we have to get out on the stage and pitch in front of this. It's a bit nerve-wracking, but looking forward to that.
Sounds terrifying. Have a lot of fun.
Thank you.
It's interesting what you say there, though, about, you know, places like Shazies being so out there, and now it's a household name. When I talk to people about investing, they say, oh, should I get a Shazies account? It's almost like the Google effect. You don't talk about a search engine, you talk about Google. And it's a similar thing with Shazies. There are quite a few DIY digital investing options, but people talk about, should I be doing Shazies? That change has come about in just a few years, quite short years, to be honest. And as you say, when they first came out, I mean, that was when I was like a baby business journalist. They came out and I remember they sent me an email saying, hey, we'd love to talk to you about it. We've got this cool idea. And I was dubious. I was like, go away, build yourself up to be a bigger business. Let's see if you're legitimate. And I look back at that and that's so funny now. But it was, like you say, a totally out there, very different idea for New Zealand. And you've got these people now sharing their ideas and helping people like yourself along. I do really feel like there's this amazing collaborative approach where people are like, we've been through the fire and we really want to help you. It's not necessarily what people would expect from a cutthroat startup scene, is it?
No, and that was the takeout for me, that, you know, they actually gave hours of their day, and they're all busy people, to share the experience, tell us the journey they've gone through, and constantly kind of, you know, motivate us. I mean, they obviously came out from the FinTech Accelerator program as well, as you know. So they are obviously got benefited from it and they want to give it back. But that was phenomenal. I mean, just taking shares is, I think, one of the stories they shared was back then, you need $5,000 in a broker account to start trading in shares.
Yeah.
I said, no, we want to do it for $10 and, you know, from my bank account. I said, no, you can't do it. It's impossible to do that. I said, no, we want to do it. And they kept on pressing, you know, pushing the boundaries. And there you are. I mean, you can do it for $5, not $2. You know, sky's the limit. Same with Henry. James was sharing that when they first went and said, okay, I want to do other people's tax return, IID just said, no, you can't do that. That's just not allowed. I said, no, I want to do it. And now they're doing it for about 65,000 New Zealanders. So yeah. I think that's something too hard to accomplish. But there are ample examples that, you know, us Kiwis, you know, with a wired mentality, we can actually make it happen, you know, if you put our heart and mind into it. Yeah, and that's the journey we are in as well.
Look, it's interesting, right? Because New Zealand does have, I would say, a semi-decent startup scene, but we're a small country. It is quite small. And I hear from a lot of people that there are significant challenges trying to get from, ooh, I've got an idea, to actually being a viable business. So what do you think are the challenges of being part of the startup scene and trying to turn these great ideas into reality?
I'd say funding. And I think all my other cohort members and fellow startup founders will agree with that statement. New Zealand investment market is not easy to crack into for startups. Investors are very conservative and take a very cautious approach to investing, which means it needs a lot of legwork and convincing to raise a very small amount of capital. I mean, as a nation, we aspire to become the next Singapore or Ireland and, you know, produce these big tech companies and corporations coming out of the innovation ecosystem. But unfortunately, that aspiration is not matched by the flow of capital. And the expectation that the founders, you know, will have to, you know, make the business safe enough for them to invest through their own capital and friends and family. You can argue that that's a fair expectation from the investors, but it's incredibly hard on the founders. And particularly for big tech business, we have to build quite a bit of tech before you can start to monetize, which is the case for Homely. It's actually quite a journey. So, yeah, I think New Zealand can definitely benefit with better access to capital. I mean, there's no shortage of ideas. There's no shortage of enthusiasm. What's holding us back is really that access to capital and kind of, you know, taking a bit of risk that, okay, they've got a big, bold ideas. Let's back this up to guys to a point. I think that's what we are missing currently from the ecosystem.
How do we do that? Is that in terms of, like, do we need more government support, like government investment? Do we need more angel investors and venture capitalists? Do we need options for small DIY investors to be able to pour in bigger numbers? You know, what would your ideal solution look like? Maybe a mix. Talk me through it.
All of the above, I'd say.
Yeah.
Because again, there's a range of business, there's a range of risk appetite, there's a range of, you know, type of ideas that you can back.
Mm.
And I guess there is a sense, you know, I get a sense, again, I'm not an expert in this, but I've been doing it for 6 months. I've got some understanding. They kind of look at everything from a set parameters, product market fit and revenue, and not all business fit that parameters. And I guess fintech is a particular challenge because a lot of people don't understand the fintech that well. So even the investors, it takes a little bit of journey. They have to take them through a journey to actually understand what the fintech is all about, what is the problem you're solving, you know, what is the benefit to the customers and to the banks and all that. So, yeah, I think it needs a little bit more specialist approach and not one size fit all. And then all of those people can actually contribute. I mean, obviously, Callahan no longer there, but they used to play a big part in fueling that ecosystem. We got benefited from Callahan. We got our R&D funding from them, but they're no longer there. I have gone overseas and I've spoken to people. New Zealand has actually got a fantastic brand. And to leverage that, to be able to leverage that, take the brand to the other markets, is going to be a fantastic, fun journey. And we have to do that. I mean, we can't just monetize in New Zealand with a country of 5 million. We have to go to the world. Just to get there, get to that point is incredibly hard. So yeah, all of the above, to be honest, is the short answer.
Just money, please, basically.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm thinking specifically of first home buyers here because a lot of the audience here will be first home buyers. Or, you know, maybe they're people who are looking to upgrade, maybe they're thinking investment property, but my heart is with the first home buyers because it's so hard, that first leap. So for anyone who's listening to this conversation who is in that position, if there was one thing you wanted them to take from this conversation that could hopefully help them with their property buying journey, what would that be?
I would say, as a customer, we often forget that we are the price that the banks and the financial institutions should be competing for. I mean, they make a lot of money from our business that we give. But we often kind of feel very grateful that, oh, just they're giving me a loan and I should be grateful about that. No, you need to go and shop around and talk to multiple banks and get the offers. And again, it goes beyond just the rates and, you know, what have you. Everyone has a different preference and requirements. And fortunately, we actually have banks and financial providers who can meet your specific needs. Through a platform like Homely, you can connect to multiple lenders. You can get their offers. You can evaluate their offers and then make the decision that really works for you rather than just take whatever has been given to you, thinking that's the best thing you can get. And that's kind of another thing that we're trying to break. No offense to the mortgage advisors, but I also know why they do that, because it is very hard for them also to go and talk to multiple banks. So they only take you to one bank or maybe two banks where they have the best relationship and they can make the deal happen. But as you know, in ComCom, they want you to go to at least three banks. And that's actually a lot of work for the advisors. But doing it with technology means that you can actually connect to Y3, you can connect to all 22 lenders that we have in the country in a click of a button. So those are the possibilities. And I do feel that as customers, we need to feel more empowered, more valued, more rewarded, and we are the prize. So that would be my advice to them.
I love that so much. Yes, take that power back. You are the prize. Act like it. Thank you so much. That's Roy Chowdhury, founder of Homely, giving us so much to think about there, whether it's property, whether it's AI, whether it's starting a business, he's doing it all. So thank you so much, Roy, for coming on. If you have more questions about this, anything else to do with money, send them through to me. I love knowing what's on your mind so I can make sure that the podcast is answering your questions. So you can find me Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn. If you're really feeling a bit nerdy, it's Francis Cook NZ on basically all of the places. But most importantly, make sure you're subscribed to the Making Sense podcast so that you never miss a trick with your money and you get to see when those questions get answered. Until next time, have a great day. Just a note before you go, this podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.